This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Ron L. Higgins, the commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, still haven't succeeded in changing that to shorten the title, joining us in studio. First of all, Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you.
I'm good. I like the sweater, like the layered look, looking sharp.
Thank you.
There's so many things to discuss here, and we have you here till 9, and it's still going to feel like not enough time probably. And I want to talk about, you know, crime is down in so many areas here in Connecticut. I want to talk about why. I want to talk about the shortage of state troopers. It's going to get even worse. I want to talk about your fraud investigations, and I want to talk about, like, volunteerism and especially as it relates to first responders. But I do want to start with, you know, what happened in Minnesota yesterday. And I just wanted your general thoughts, viewing it from your career and what you do now. Just, I wanted to, before giving specific questions, what do you think?
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for that question, Brian. You know, I did watch the news cycle last night, and I did watch the video, and it was tough to watch, you know. First and foremost, I want to let you know that I feel terrible for the family of the woman who lost her life. Law enforcement out there is working their butts off. And I do know that in the state of Connecticut, we have worked really, really hard and have passed some laws to ensure that police don't unnecessarily place themselves in a position where they have to use deadly force.
But they're not police. It's different, right? What are they?
They're federal agents.
Okay. And they have full authority like the FBI? Like, I don't, that you could explain this to me first and foremost, because they do have arresting privileges, if you will. But if they don't have a warrant, and if you're a citizen, there are different things. Now, I don't, the way that woman behaved in the car was not appropriate, obviously. I don't know that it merited a bullet in the head, but I don't know what ICE is able to do and not do and how they're trained, because they're not trained like state troopers and local police.
Let me just take it back a little bit. I am not 100% certain. I don't think anyone is 100% certain right now as to what happened. We do have some information, and there's a lot of speculation. Could we say that we have a sense of what happened based on what we saw? Absolutely. But what I will say that is Connecticut law enforcement is trained extremely well. I am not familiar with federal training. I'm not familiar with the training that federal agents go through, but I can speak to the training that Connecticut law enforcement goes through. I could also say that, you know, it is prohibited for police officers in the state of Connecticut to place themselves intentionally in front of a moving vehicle. It is also not permissible for a police officer to shoot at a moving vehicle unless there is a threat beyond that moving vehicle. So there's, you know, there's a lot of different things to consider in this particular case, and I'm sure that the state of Minnesota and the feds are going to look at all of those things.
Yeah, and I'll let those comments stand for themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. it is what it is. If you've seen the video, then you can put that in the context, what Commissioner mm-hmm. Higgins had to say. Then there's ISIS. What's happening here in Connecticut? Are you in coordination with them at all? Is there any interaction? Are they, they're not nearly as active as they are in other states, but they are doing, we did the car wash stories and all that stuff.
So ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, has operated in Connecticut. And let me just say, Brian, that they've been operating in Connecticut for many, many, many years. They didn't just start operating in Connecticut. The Connecticut Trust Act really describes how Connecticut law enforcement can coordinate with ICE. Now,
but do you talk to them? Are you in any communication with the federal government on any of this stuff?
We are in contact with the FBI and various federal agencies on a regular basis,
but not ICE.
Well, I can say ICE is very seldom, okay. if at all. Very seldom, if at all.
So you don't get a heads up if an operation's going to happen or this or that or the other?
No.
Okay.
No. Some police chiefs will tell you they've gotten a call, but I haven't gotten any calls. We haven't gotten any calls.
And is that standard? Or is that different?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But at the same time, you know, I will just say that.
Let me just interject for a second. I don't want this to be political, and I understand like trepidation because the way I view it, you know, listen, I understand the pressures because, you know, the both sidism of this issue, and I know you don't want to be a political animal, and people are making certain judgments and assumptions based on where they stand politically, and they're twisting themselves into pretzels, as the metaphor I used to conform to whatever they believe. And I'm not trying to put you in that position, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to understand, you know, from precedent and experience, how you analyze this. And you might have to say a few things that might not dovetail with some other people, and it's not comfortable, but it's important.
What concerns me most, Brian, is deconfliction. It is important that local, state, and federal law enforcement deconflict. So what do I mean by that?
Yeah, please.
It means that when another agency is coming into the jurisdiction of another, that there isn't a blue-on-blue, that there isn't a situation where two departments who are lawfully there doing their job don't necessarily put each other in harm's way and someone gets hurt. We have to be coordinated. That is my concern.
Yeah, it's a valid one. Ronald Higgins, Commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, joining us here on Brian and Company. We only have a minute here before we have to take a break. And so I'll just stay with this, and then we'll get into the crime stats and some other things. We have two more blocks with you. Is there a sense that when you talk about, we don't know the whole story, is like what happened before the video started rolling? Like, when do you think we'll have better answers? Are these things that we'll get in months or days or weeks?
Well, I think that there's going to be an investigation, obviously. They're on the ground right now investigating, trying to find out what happened, interviewing witnesses, interviewing federal law enforcement that was there. They're doing everything that we would normally do to investigate an officer-involved shooting. So, you know, there's going to be a true set of facts that comes out eventually from this.
So listen, here are some statistics. Aggravated assault in Connecticut, down 23%. Robberies are down 24%. Rape, down 21%. Motor vehicle theft, 28%. Those are some pretty big numbers. So coming up here after we take a break, we're going to talk about the why and whether it's sustainable with Ron L. Higgins, the commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services. Your time is 8:42. We continue with Ron L. Higgins, of course, the commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, here in studio with us on Brian and Company. Before we move on to some Connecticut issues or the crime stats and some other stuff, you wanted to put a little postscript on the conversation we had before.
Yeah, and thank you, Brian. I just wanted to just say that, you know, I, like many other Connecticut law enforcement leaders, graduated from the FBI National Academy. I am also a graduate of the Naval Postgraduate School Center for Homeland Security and Defense. So some of the training that I have benefited from came from the federal government. So, and we work closely with the FBI here in the state of Connecticut, and we will continue to do so along with HSI, along with the DEA and ATF. I just want to say that we have a wonderful working relationship, and we're going to keep it that way. We work hard to maintain our relationship with the feds here in the state of Connecticut.
Got it. So those crime stats, again, robbery down 24%, motor vehicle theft down 28%, just for examples. That those are big drops. And so I'm curious if, like, I don't know, is it a post-pandemic thing? How does it compare to pre-pandemic? Like, what's your best explanation for this?
Well, crime is declining nationally. We do know that. But the reality here is, you know, the crime that we've experienced in Connecticut, it has been somewhat novel in a sense. What we've done is work with our federal, state, and local partners to identify what the root causes of the crime are, focus on that, and then maintain a steady stream of enforcement and detection.
But it can't just be like better best practices. This is, what's the trend? Like, what's going on? What do you think?
Well, listen, we work also with our state's attorney's offices. We're identifying these individuals. We're taking them off the street so that they can't reoffend. It is not easy, but, you know, we are out there, the state police, the local law enforcement, working with the feds, and we're also educating the public. We're also educating the public. For instance, we had an issue with car thefts in the state of Connecticut. Police department started to do public education about leaving your key fob in the cup holders. Help us. Help us help you. Help us help the community. It is working. We had our attorney general who did a press conference a few weeks ago who actually worked with Kia and Hyundai so to hold them accountable,
right,
so that they can put some controls in place so these vehicles aren't easily stolen. So it has been a number of different things that we have done, and it's not easy, but you have to keep at it.
You know, traffic fatalities are down too. I'm curious, are there any areas of concern?
Traffic fatalities are down, but success is never final. My concern is that they're going to go up again. I don't want them to go up again. We had tremendous success beginning with the at the beginning of 2025. The first three or four months of 2025, we saw some significant reductions that I believe carried us throughout the year.
They were more normalized for the latter two-thirds of the year.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But what was happening? What did we do differently during that period of time?
Anything?
Yeah. We had some significant traffic enforcement on the highways. I want to maintain that momentum. We can only do that with more troopers on the roads.
This is a perfect segue with Ron L. Higgins, the commissioner, again, of Protective Services, or I don't want to go through the whole name every time. Sorry.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people before this conversation about not only are you down state troopers, but you're going to be down in the next 18 months, you're going to get a ton of retirements, I'm told. And this is a number that doesn't get solved in a year. And so it's interesting. So what I'm curious about, first of all, is what was the difference in the first third of the year and the rest of the year? Did you lose so many troopers you couldn't put people on the highways? Or that's number one. Number two is, how do you deal? Because we were talking earlier, it's hard to recruit now. Let's be honest.
It's hard to recruit, and the state of Connecticut has high standards. And that's a good thing because the state of Connecticut has some of the best law enforcement officers.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no, so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Officers, best trained law enforcement officers in the state of Connecticut, bar none. It is difficult to recruit, but here's what I'll say. We had 38 troopers graduate just last month.
Okay, but and how many a year? One class a year?
No,
how many?
We have up to three classes a year.
Okay.
But we have close to 40 that are set to retire on February 1st. It is my hope that we're able to retain some of those troopers. And the only way that we're going to be able to do that is by to incentivize them.
Which means pay them more money?
I'd say pay them some more money or give them some sort of incentive bonus to remain on. It's not just about losing the body. It's not just about losing that person. It's about losing the experience as well.
Of course.
So the 38 troopers that just graduated, they're still training on the road. They're in their FTO period. Okay, so they're working with senior troopers to learn how to do the job. What about that 20-year trooper that we have poured so much training into that is going to walk out the door and going to go likely to another local police department who is going to benefit
right
from their experience?
What is it? Is it just about, like, again, we just talked about all the challenges. I mean, it's so hard, I think, to be a cop or a state trooper because you have to follow a ton of rules. And then you have to be able to react almost perfectly in intense moments. Like, it's almost like we ask too much in the modern era, and people are like, I don't want to deal with it. So, like, how do you get capable people to want to do this?
So I do believe the pendulum is starting to swing back. I do believe we're starting to see more people interested in joining the ranks of law enforcement. And you know something? Law enforcement officers are held to a higher standard, as they should be. As they should be. So I think what we're doing a better job of, but again, we have to work hard at it, is identifying young people earlier on, the same way that we do in high school with our trades, with electronics or carpentry or food service. We have to identify young people who want to go into law enforcement or public safety and create pathways for them to enter into these jobs. Here's the key, though, Brian. We have to figure out what to do after we've attracted these young people, after they've reached the age of 18. You have to be 21 to be a police officer in the state of Connecticut. So what do we do with these young people between the ages of 18 and 21 to keep them interested? We have to create law enforcement adjacent opportunities for them, and we have to pay them so that so we keep them busy, we keep them engaged, we keep them training, and we're coaching them and mentoring them so that when they're able to join, they can.
Why can't you, like, I don't know what sort of criminal justice degrees they have at our state universities, but man, you should just roll out some free tuition for those folks to get criminal justice degrees. It's almost like like ROTC or something like that. Like, they go to school for free and become a trooper. I don't know. Like, is that stuff exist?
Yeah. I mean, we have to look at our institutions of higher learning and see what we can do there. But I think we need to think differently, though. I don't necessarily believe a law enforcement officer does not need a 4-year degree in order to become a police officer.
Right. No, I get that.
We want them to have some secondary education. We want them to have those skills, but you don't need it. And it's expensive. And some Some are saying, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to make that investment. So we're working right now with Eastern Connecticut State University very closely on some programs, pathways that will enable people to get into jobs in public safety in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
And we hope that that turns into a model for other institutions as well.
People don't like to pay for it necessarily, but if it's free and it offers them a career path, you know, we're seeing in the trades like with electric boat and stuff like that. But listen, there's two other issues I want to get to, and there's many things I'd like to talk about, but these are important. We saw also in Minnesota about this like daycare fraud and stuff like that. Now, you have a fraud element here, and I'm just curious, like, what sort of fraud?
Yeah.
Now, and after you see Minnesota, because we know there's COVID fraud in every state in the union, including here in Connecticut. So, like, you see that news, can you say, okay, well, we need to do an audit of X, Y, and Z? So the first question is, what kind of fraud do you guys look into? And B, are you going to change how you do things based on what happened in Minnesota?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say we're going to be changing anything in response to Minnesota, but I will point out, you shared earlier that we have had some significant decreases in crime.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. But what is concerning me, what is keeping me up at night, is the level of fraud that we are seeing here in Connecticut.
What kinds?
We're seeing identity theft. We're seeing fraud is surging by nearly 90%. And you would think that it's elder fraud. Yes, that is happening. But I would share with you that the age range of victims in fraud in the state of Connecticut is between 45 and 64. That's the biggest group that's being impacted. We're starting to see, our Connecticut Intelligence Center is starting to see a trend that's going up 95, Interstate 95 and up 91. And we're tracking that trend. We're going to be reaching out to the AG's office and some others to see what they're seeing, because we have to figure out where this is coming from. And when you think about fraud, it's impacting everyone in the state of Connecticut. It's impacting everyone in their pocket where they are.
But from a jurisdiction standpoint, like, we know the feds look into this stuff. Does all fraud in the state of Connecticut fall under your umbrella? Like, oh, because obviously Tong's office, and I just don't understand the structure of it.
Yeah, sure. It's again, just like everything else, it'll be a local, federal, and state endeavor. We've got to work together on this. Those cases that the feds can take, they will take. Those cases that we can take at the state level, we will take as well. Oftentimes, though, the federal resources are much more deeper than the local resources, state and local resources.
Are there ways, I mean, again, like daycare fraud in Minnesota, I don't know if there's ways to look at what possibly could be going on in a lot of different areas in Connecticut, or we say it's not possible in our backyard. I don't know. I just feel like what we saw there is probably being duplicated everywhere.
It could be.
But is that the FBI that does that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Because I don't know what sort of coordination, because in Minnesota, it's like the FBI sort of raised it, but the state did nothing about it. So if the state did nothing about it, was it someone in your position, or was it the AG's office that didn't do it? Like, I'm curious.
I did not track
okay. The
fraud in Minnesota. That I'm aware of what happened. But here's what I'll say. Whether it's state or local, it is incumbent upon the state or local entity to have internal controls in place to ensure that fraud isn't occurring. I mean, you've got to take care of what's happening in your own house. That's the bottom line.
Right. We're talking with Ronnell Higgins, the Commissioner of Protective Services here in Connecticut. I was really glad in the notes, you know, I had an exchange with your comms people about volunteer firefighters. We go everywhere in the state. You see that map. Our goal is to go to Hall 169. We don't really care that much about Fairfield County, but we'll probably go down there anyway. But, you know, we visit these towns, and we spend the morning at a Greasy Spoon, and we talk about what the issues are, mm-hmm. and almost all of them are being decimated because the volunteer culture is fading. And you give me a number that has been a 50% drop over the last decade in volunteer firefighters. Like, what are we going to do? I mean, that's a big hole.
Yeah, I, like you, have traveled this entire state, primarily because of CSP, but also because of the fire service in Demis. And we have to start thinking differently about how we're providing fire service in the state of Connecticut. The volunteer ranks are dwindling. They're dwindling at a rate that we're not going to be able to provide service in different parts of the state of Connecticut, and that is a problem. So I'm working closely with our comptroller, Sean Scanlon, who has been a champion of the fire service.
Yeah. Yes.
And he's got some great ideas. I have some ideas as well. Perhaps
you
we start do we start to think about the state
county?
Of Connecticut? Well, the state providing fire service in different regions throughout the state of Connecticut. It is likely not popular.
So start up an outpost in a rural spot, a state fire station.
Well, think about how we have state police barracks throughout the state that service different towns and municipalities throughout the state of Connecticut. Why couldn't we think of something similar for the state of Connecticut? Because, again, we just do not have the numbers that are volunteering again.
So, you know, for me as a citizen, so that means give up on the volunteer concept. Part of me was like, could we maybe incentivize volunteerism and get a more holistic cultural push?
So we let's think about
that. That's just me.
Yeah. So we incentivize volunteerism, but and then where's the start and where's the end? We need to maintain systems for public safety. We need to ensure that there's not going to be any breaks in public safety. The same struggles that we're having with policing right now, we're going to get it right. And once we get it right, we'll maintain it for a period of time. But where we are with the fire service right now, we can't afford to put money behind incentivizing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do think there should be some incentive.
It's not truly volunteerism if you're incentivized.
Precisely.
But
that's my point.
Yeah. Well, then let me real quick, because I want to give you a chance to have a closing statement. What's the timetable on something like that?
I don't know. I think first and foremost, we have to study the efficacy of it. Again, these are just
because that's
ideas.
Bigger government. That's more money. That's more administration. That's more a lot of stuff.
All that. So we have to study it. You know, these are ideas. I think it's an idea worth studying. So does the comptroller. So let's take a look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to Sean about it. He's made it a point in some of the moments we've had together. His voice is Ron L. Higgins. He's the commissioner of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. Just last thoughts. You know, we catch up with you maybe 2-3 times a year. It's always good to have you in, talk about a lot of these things, especially with the backdrop of some of the news of the day. Anything else you want people to know?
Yeah, I just began year number 3 as commissioner. In November. I love my job. I think the agency is on the right path. I think they're doing amazing work. I am proud of the work that each of the 6 divisions are doing. And I just want you to know that DESP, the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, is each one of the divisions is answering the call from where they are, and they are leading the way. Answering the call, whether it's the Connecticut State Police, whether it's Post or the fire service, where they're not only answering the call in the classrooms and teaching our next generation of police officers, but they're also, and firefighters, but they're also leading the way and setting the standards. Demis is doing an amazing job. We're going to have our deputy commissioner is going to be stepping down in February. That's going to be a big change for us. But our crime lab, I mean, we think about the Brown University shooting and the role that the Connecticut crime lab played in that. We have a crime lab here in the state of Connecticut led by Dr. Valero that is really a national model. So I am extremely proud of the work that we're doing. We have so much more to do, but I'm proud to be at the helm.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no, so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, Dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now, I don't even think twice about saying yes to Plansmore, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.